Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. UN Ambassador Susan Rice went into the belly of the beast yesterday, meeting with two prominent Republican senators who have been critical of her role in the aftermath of the Libyan consulate attack back in September. As Rice continues to take heat from Republican senators, President Obama again reiterated his support for her, saying he couldn't be prouder of the job she's done. Ed O'Keefe is a congressional correspondent and writes the Two Chambers blog for the Washington Post. He's here to explain what's really going on with the Susan Rice nomination process, why she's been up in the Hill when she's not been nominated yet. Ed, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So let's back up a little bit. So Susan Rice's name is being floated as a possible choice to replace Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But have we had this sort of vetting before the vetting process before?
It's hard to recall any example of that. Certainly, this appears to be a bit of a unique case. And you're right. The fact that she's up here, in a sense, kissing the rings of her biggest critics even before she's been nominated is not normally how it's done. Usually the president picks someone, then the nominee begins a series of conversations with people on her confirming committee, with congressional leaders, in hopes of winning them over and, sorting out any specific concerns they may have before the confirmation hearings. And in this case, she's up here now because Republican senators especially, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Kelly Ayotte of Arizona, South Carolina, New Hampshire, have really led a charge against her and more broadly against the administration and how it responded to those September 11th attacks in Libya that left four Americans dead, including the ambassador. They have called her out for the fact that she appeared on the Sunday morning political talk shows just a few days after those attacks and sort of botched the explanation. She pinned it on a spontaneous demonstration, but intelligence reports since and, frankly, press reports from the ground demonstrated that that wasn't exactly the case. So she came up here this week, kind of surprised everyone by calling up Senator McCain, Graham, and Ayotte and said, let's meet. Let's talk about this. They did, and the senators came out and said, I'm actually more concerned about things now than I was before this meeting. So kind of blew up in her face. And then she had other meetings yesterday with two other moderate Republican senators who also came out and gave a lukewarm response, but didn't necessarily say they would vote against her for Secretary of State if she were to ever become the nominee, just saying broadly that they have concerns with her performance and how the administration handled the incident.
Listeners, we're going to take your calls about the Susan Rice possible nomination and some of the other open positions on the Obama cabinet. Here's the rumored list: Treasury, SEC, Transportation, Department of Defense, Education, and of course, Secretary of State. The phones are open. The phone number is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Give us your thoughts or nominate who would be your fantasy cabinet. Who would you like to see on Obama's cabinet in his second term? 212-433-9692. Now, Ed, I want to ask you about moderate Republican Senator Susan Collins. She came out of her meeting yesterday with Susan Rice not impressed. And she mentioned, as you said, she didn't like that Susan Rice showed up on Sunday talk shows during the heat of a presidential campaign. She said she seemed to be playing a political role after the attacks in Benghazi. Is that a fair criticism, or is Susan Rice, the UN ambassador, somebody we should hear from after Americans die abroad?
Well, it depends on who you ask. There have been reports that she was asked to do those Sunday show appearances because Secretary Clinton was too tired or otherwise unavailable to do it herself. But if you look at her formal responsibilities, Rice does not have any day-to-day responsibility over embassy security or over what really was going on at those, at that location in Benghazi. Certainly she was involved because there was action at the United Nations and there was general diplomacy going on. But it ultimately didn't fall to her, and I think that was the part of the concern, is to the Republicans, she embodies really what went wrong or what appears to have gone wrong in the days after that attack. And it just so happens that, she is who she is. She's a close friend of the president. She is someone who has been rumored to be in line for a promotion. And Republicans have seized on that. You talk to congressional Democrats, they say, look, Republicans are doing everything they can right now to sort of bloody her up, pardon the term, but that's really what they're trying to do, they say politically. frankly, and also try to sort of psych out the president and get him not to nominate her, because if he doesn't, then they can kind of say, aha, we successfully held off this confirmation. But if he does ultimately tap her, and all signs suggest at this point that that's kind of still the way he's headed, then it forces a very interesting fight, because she will obviously have to testify before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and what's to say she doesn't do a phenomenal job, and that at least a few Republicans on the committee go, you know what, I'm not pleased with how you did this, I'm not a huge fan of how you ran things at the UN, but I will at least vote in the Senate to proceed to a final vote, to, you know, invoke cloture and move on and not filibuster you. The problem is that you have at least Senators John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Kelly Ayotte, and James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who's also on foreign relations and deals with a lot of these issues, saying, well, I'm going to block her nomination if it comes up here. And the question then is, do Republicans really want to start next year, when it conceivably this nomination will be made, in such a way that they're blocking the president's choice for Secretary of State, who is a woman and who is black, amid all these other more important, arguably, things going on, whether it's fiscal policy, immigration reform, or frankly just the start of a new presidency?
So, again, there's been a lot of talk about the politics of this, but let's back up just a minute and look again at the criticisms of Susan Rice, what we knew then about the Benghazi attacks, what we know now. She has been criticized for going on the Sunday talk shows and calling it a spontaneous reaction to that video that was on the internet about the Prophet Muhammad. What do we know now about what intelligence agencies knew, whether that was correct information? What have we learned since this sort of, as this controversy has grown? What's the latest?
Well, we know that it was a little more organized than just spontaneous, and we know that there were al-Qaeda affiliates or al-Qaeda-inspired groups working in the area. We also know that Ambassador Stevens had been requesting more security at the location, saying that, you know, look, this is a violent place. There are extremists here, and I feel that there's a need for more protection. He was exercising, however, a policy of diplomacy that was put in place by Secretary Clinton, which sort of encourages ambassadors and senior diplomats to get outside the embassy compound to work among the people. So he was a very high-profile person. And remember, the Benghazi really was the center of the Libyan revolution. He had been there working with those people. He knew a lot of them. Therefore, he was, in a sense, you know, a well-known potential target. The other curious thing, and I think this remains a valid point of concern, is it was September 11th. You know, for the rest of American history, that will remain a sensitive date, certainly in areas like Libya and the Middle East and North Africa. And a lot of senators of both parties have said, why wasn't there more security put in place at sensitive locations like Libya and our other North African and Middle East locations in Pakistan and Afghanistan? Why was an ambassador allowed to go out on that day and be, you know, so poorly guarded amid what could have been a very serious situation, especially considering that that country's undergoing a revolution? There's so much unrest. There's a presidential campaign going on, and there's always going to be threats around that time. And that is a question that still hasn't entirely been answered. Secretary Clinton will be up here in December to talk a bit about that and explain herself. And there is an ongoing review at the State Department that's being led by the former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, Admiral Mike Mullen, that is also trying to go back and reconstruct what went wrong and what potentially went right and who inevitably might be to blame.
All right, James in Brooklyn, you have some thoughts about the politics of this and what happened in Libya and what's happening on Capitol Hill. What do you think?
Yes, I think that this situation being interviewed by McCain and the other senator has nothing to do with vetting a Secretary of State. This is an independent investigation of malfeasance that would have occurred with or without someone being vetted for Secretary of State. It's a totally independent scandal that's glaring.
Well, Ed, let me ask you about that. Is this happening on a separate track, investigations into what happened in Benghazi continuing as Susan Rice is making these, you know, calls to key senators on Capitol Hill?
Yes, there are several different committees up here looking into the situation, the Foreign Relations Committee, the Intelligence Committee, Armed Services Committee, because the military could have but didn't really play a role that day, and the Senate Governmental Affairs and Homeland Security Committee. So you've got at least four different congressional probes underway. Rice is, you know, showing up to talk partly in as part of those. Remember that General David Petraeus was up here a few weeks ago after he resigned to also testify as part of those investigations, something that they were very appreciative of him doing. But those four investigations are ongoing. There is also a State Department review underway. And, of course, there's anything that, frankly, the media finds out. And if you'll recall, in the days right after that attack, reporters were able to very easily access the location, pick up documents, take them with them. But the FBI wasn't able to get to the location. So there's a lot of different investigations going on right now. Yes, this is kind of a proxy battle in that. And what it is really is, like I said, they're personifying or embodying their concerns in Susan Rice, because she was the face of the administration's response to all this just days after it happened. You know, if it wasn't her, they might have been attacking Hillary Clinton, or they might have been attacking, you know, the National Security Advisor if it had been him. But I think that you've got to remember also, Rice played a very important role back during the 2008 presidential campaign. If you turned on cable news talk shows or the morning shows, Susan Rice was there defending his foreign policy proposals and criticizing John McCain's. So in a sense, you know, this could be a little bit of payback for McCain, in that he remembers that Rice was the one out there vociferously criticizing him about 5 years ago.
So, you know, you say that Susan Rice is still likely to be the nominee for Secretary of State, but another main character in a presidential race is still, name is floating out there. That is Senator John Kerry. Peter, in Brooklyn, you have some thoughts about that?
Yeah, this sort of follows up on what your guest just said. I'm curious whether he thinks Republicans might be not only trying to get some payback, but at least some of them, but perhaps trying to play offense. The one theory I've seen from some observers is that one reason they're particularly vociferous about how terrible Susan Rice is that Kerry is the other leading candidate being talked about. And if he were to be nominated, he would have to resign his Senate seat, which would trigger another special election in Massachusetts, and Scott Brown won the last one. So versus a lesser-known Democrat, I've seen speculation Republicans are hopeful they might take back a Senate seat if Kerry were nominated. And these same folks have said very publicly, oh, Senator Kerry, he would sail right through. We love Senator Kerry. He'd be great.
So, Ed, what do you make of these John Kerry conspiracy theories?
Peter nailed it. That's exactly what it is. Republicans, I think, in the back of their minds, not only do they like and respect Kerry and think he'd be a better choice, but yes, they're playing politics. They know that since Scott Brown just lost his Senate seat and has said he's eager to somehow get back here, that if Kerry had to leave, Scott Brown might be a shoo-in to win it. Next year, Democrats will have a 55-seat majority. That would shrink by one if the seat were to flip, if Kerry were to leave. There are plenty of Democrats in Massachusetts who could run and win it, but, you know, when Ted Kennedy died, everyone assumed the Democrats would win it then, and they didn't. And you talk to Senate Democrats, and they say much the same. Look, we'd rather see Susan Rice get it, because for our purposes, keeping John Kerry here maintains our majority and doesn't create another potential headache for us.
And what an awkward position for John Kerry. He chairs the committee that the nominee would come before. Is that right?
That's right. He does. It was a committee that was once chaired by Joe Biden when he was in the Senate before he went to the White House. President Obama was on it as a senator as well. So, yes, he would conceivably be working to confirm the person who's getting the job that he's made no secret he'd love to have one day. My newspaper, The Washington Post, others have reported that Kerry is reportedly under consideration to one day succeed Leon Panetta at the Pentagon. Kerry, who normally loves talking to reporters out in the halls outside the Senate chamber, has been a little more, let's say, less available in recent weeks, but has been rather supportive of Susan Rice and saying, look, she's a perfectly qualified person. If the president wants to tap her, so be it. As for his own prospects, he stays tight-lipped.
Okay, John in Brooklyn, what do you think about all this?
Well, what I don't understand is why Susan Rice and the administration felt they needed to go before the Sunday talk shows and present a clear and definitive version of what happened when, in fact, I mean, probably the intelligence agencies didn't entirely know what was going on as well. I think there's like I have a friend who used to work in the CIA, and he said the most important thing he learned was the ability to say, I don't know. And why didn't Susan Rice simply say, we don't know, instead of I'm disappointed that the administration didn't come forward and say, this is everything isn't clear. Because, in fact, there are news reports and photographs from the scene that showed not people who were necessarily al-Qaeda or al-Qaeda affiliates, but just random hoodlums. So the idea that it's either or, it's either al-Qaeda or it was a demonstration or spontaneous demonstration, doesn't fly with me either.
John in Jersey City, you have something to add to that, right?
Yes. In fact, what I find so troubling is that almost all of the news reports that I've read or heard, even in the one that was introduced this segment, failed to go back to Susan Rice's original transcript from those Sunday shows. In the transcript, if you read it carefully, she does not say it was only a spontaneous protest. She qualifies repeatedly her assessment and even does say that, and when she comes on the Sunday shows, that in fact terrorists were involved or people with, linked to terror. And, I mean, I just find it so troubling that the media itself won't even go back to the transcript. The other thing I think that we've heard that's come out is that the CIA may have been investigating people, conducting investigations there. And if the CIA was involved in conducting investigations there, they may, who knows what they may have requested in terms of State Department personnel, in terms of the Marines, et cetera, protection for the ambassador. So I mean, I think there's just so much more here. But this all began well before the election, it seems to me, as a way to damage the president. And I think we shouldn't ever also lose sight of that fact, that this has been politicized from the very beginning. So whatever we may think about Susan Rice, I think we should go back to actually what she did say. I mean, because there's a transcript of it, and it's actually much more careful, much more qualified than it's being reported, but also that this has been politicized from the beginning.
An important point, John. Ed, what do you think about all that? Do you think that this is that Susan Rice has been mischaracterized as this has continued to be reported and talked about?
Democrats would tell you that she has, yes, and that she was merely doing the job that was presented to her, that she was working with what was the best available at the time, and that Republicans should back off. In fact, one senator yesterday, Mary Landrieu, Louisiana, said to me, there are a bunch of senators running around here saying, "What the heck is John McCain thinking?" This woman was just doing her job. It is unfair, and he needs to back off. This makes the Senate look bad. Other House Democrats, senior House Democrats who are also African-Americans, have said that they think this smacks a little bit of racism and sexism, that they're only picking on her because she's a woman and because she's black. And they've especially seized on Republicans' use of the word incompetent, suggesting that either she's incompetent or she's playing politics. You haven't seen them use that word much since this criticism surfaced. But what they were essentially saying is, how can you call someone who's a Stanford grad and a Rhodes Scholar and a U.N. ambassador and a former assistant secretary of state incompetent? The only reason you're doing that is because she's a woman and she's black. And Republicans have turned around and said, no, no, no. We respect her. We respect her credentials. We just have concerns with it. And that criticism of their criticism, in a sense, softened their rhetoric a bit. And we are where we are now.
So, Ed, just like they have on Capitol Hill, we've spent most of our time talking about cabinet openings, focusing on Susan Rice and the Secretary of State position. But Joshua in Chappaqua, New York, what are your thoughts about some of the other open seats?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Chappaqua, Joshua in Chappaqua, what are your thoughts about the other open seats in the cabinet? What would you like to see?
Well, during the first administration, Obama had been reading Kearns's book, Band of Rivals. And the idea was to take your enemies and bring them into the tent so you could watch them and benefit from their skills. So today, Romney is meeting with Obama for lunch. And I would really suggest that he consider offering Romney a cabinet position. And I think that Romney is not tied into the Republican establishment. He's a bright guy. I didn't support him during the election, but I think that he has clearly things that would benefit Obama. And I like the jiu-jitsu of co-opting one of your rivals. So I would suggest that he offer Romney a cabinet post.
All right, Joshua. Rita, on the Upper West Side, you have a slightly different take about who should be on Obama's cabinet?
Oh, yes. Hi. Well, I don't have a specific name, and thank you for taking my call, and this is a great conversation. But I would earnestly plea for the president to select a Secretary of Treasury who does not have any Goldman Sachs experience in his or her background. It's a real concern, both for Democratic and Republican administrations. There's been so much Goldman Sachs influence. And I'm not saying that they're an evil company, but I think you get, when you work for a big company like that, you get a prism that you look through that makes Goldman Sachs look good. And I constantly say, well, why did they get dollar for dollar on the AIG bailout and other people were getting, you know, nothing like that? I think that's a very dangerous history we have with them. So I'm not that knowledgeable about smart people in the finance world, but I'd love suggestions on non-Goldman Sachs smart financial people for Secretary of Treasury.
All right. Thanks, Rita. Ed O'Keefe with The Washington Post. Just quickly, any curveballs expected in terms of filling some of these cabinet positions? Any Mitt Romney chances that he'll be joining the Obama administration?
Wouldn't that be something? We'll see, because that launches today. I think the only curveball is it might take a little longer than we normally would expect because of the fiscal cliff negotiations underway right now. The president appears eager to keep his team in place. You will inevitably need a new Secretary of State, a new Treasury Secretary, a new representative at the U.S. Trade Representative, a new Transportation Secretary, a new Defense Secretary, and a new Attorney General. But many of those people may not leave until well into next year. Names floated for Treasury, sadly, in the case of your caller, do include people include people who work at Goldman Sachs, including his current chief of staff, Jack Lew. There are, of course, we've talked about state as for, you know, transportation. There's some thought maybe like currently there might be a Republican pick there. There needs to be a commerce secretary, which is the position that many thought Romney would be perfect for. You know, Kerry, like we said, has been mentioned possibly for one day serving at the Pentagon. And at the Justice Department, it's expected if Eric Holder goes, that Janet Napolitano would really like to have that job, so she'd slide over from Homeland Security, which would create another big controversial opening. So a lot of deck chairs to be rearranged, but it may not happen until well into next year.
All right. Ed O'Keefe writes the Two Chambers blog and is a congressional correspondent for The Washington Post. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Up next, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas is lobbying for non-member observer status at the UN. We'll talk with Steve Clemens about what that could mean in the Middle East. Back in a minute.